Okay, 1 Timothy 5. I kind of chuckled at the heading of 1 Timothy 5 in my Bible anyway. Not that we'd have to be reminded how to treat somebody else, but it's clear that we do. We need to be reminded. We need to be taught. We need to be encouraged how to treat other people. And that's really what this chapter's about, how to treat other people in the church, how to relate to them and minister to them. And so Paul, in encouraging this young man who is overseeing this church in Ephesus, he writes, "Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, younger men as brothers." You know, how do we treat elders? I think I shared with you just a couple weeks ago that we used to, when we had the school here, we'd have different programs and so on, and we'd always have many times the state policeman or the fire, well, we'd have the fireman come and maybe a state policeman, maybe a city policeman come and share with the kids and, you know, just talk. And I know many of them, especially the policemen. The one told me that the biggest thing that he had seen, and he had been in the city of Warren Police Force for many years. I think it was over 25 years he had been a police officer. And he said just over that time how he saw such a deterioration in the civility of people, and especially young people, and how they had, his words was, they don't respect anything or anyone anymore. They have no reverence for anyone. And so I think that we see that we see that there's a huge void in really how many of these young people, and now they're even adults, have been raised, and that we don't. I just remember, I think I shared with you, we had a family move here from Atlanta, Georgia, and their kids, they, two little boys, they're just, you know, maybe four or five, and I'll never forget how, when the parents introduced me to them, and they shook my hand. You know, these little kids, they've been taught to shake, and I'm very pleased to meet you, sir. And whenever you would speak to them, yes, sir, no, sir. And I heard that from them, you know, anybody older, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir. And I thought, wow, you know, these guys, they are instilling something very good, you know, in their children, that there's respect to be had. And what we're going to see here, really, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on, Timothy isn't saying as a pastor or as someone that loves the people around you that you can't. The word that he's using here is a very, very harsh word, that Timothy, you're not to strike out. Literally, that's what the Greek says. You're not to strike out against an older person, an elder. Do older people need corrected? Yes. And I put in your outline that Timothy says, even in this very chapter, to rebuke and encourage other people. So he's not saying that we can't correct and encourage those that need that. But I think what he is saying is that there is a heart and an approach whenever we, you know, would approach someone, you know, to see their, maybe to encourage them to, you know, change or to consider, you know, what they're doing. Paul says it in Galatians, if I see another in sin, I'm to go to that one, and what? My whole heart and going is to restore. My whole heart and going is to redeem. My whole heart and going is to bring healing. And so I need to do it in gentleness. And I need to do it in humility, knowing that I could be doing the same things. None of us are beyond, you know, sinning. None of us are beyond, you know, doing these things. And so do not rebuke, do not strike out at an older man. I just think it's good, you know, that we have respect for those who are in authority. We're commanded to do it. To those who are elders, to those who are older, to those who are again, in positions. I put a couple other verses in there, Leviticus and Proverbs. You know, they both talk about, you know, even a white, the one, you know, those that have white hair, you know, older, and they hopefully have wisdom, they have experience, they have a track record. And so when we approach them, you know, we should approach them in humility and again, reverence and respect. Certainly we shouldn't ever, I mean, we should all consider our approaches to people. I mean, I've been told many times, well, you know, I kind of rub people the wrong way and you know, people kind of don't like it, but that's just the way I am. I think that's horrible. I'm the way I am, and I'm a sinner, and I'm called to be like Jesus. I'm called to become like Jesus. And so I ought to be praying, Lord, fill me with your spirit, and Lord, change me to be like you. Make me more like you, Lord. And not use it as an excuse to be like I am. So don't rebuke an older man. Yeah, I think too, just and then I'll just say, well, I need to wash my mouth. I need to wash my mouth. Wash my mouth, how I talk about other people. And so don't rebuke an older man. Exhort him as a father. Encourage him. You know, love him as a father. Encourage him. And then younger men as brothers. How do we treat women? Treat older women as mothers. You know, how would you treat you when, well, maybe when you were a teenager or or a young person wanting your own way. But most generally, we love our mothers, right? We respect them and we reverence them and we hold them in high esteem. And so treat older women, again, it's just that idea that they are your, when you look at the church, it is a family, and you can almost look at it as we have fathers and mothers and grandfathers and grandmothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, and then with all purity. You know, there's a sense that as we relate, again, it's and especially in these relationships, they should be pure relationships. They're, again, we're called, Leviticus 19, we're called to holiness because God's holy. And so the whole idea, there's a purity and a holiness in our relationships. Honor widows who are really widows. When I read and went down through this week, I thought, wow, you know, there's just a sense here how we need to hear this today. You know, maybe not necessarily even for widows, but just generally. You know, what Paul's saying is that there in the church, there are all kinds of widows, but he's going to define what a real widow is who needs support, like from the church. So honor widows who are really widows. Those who are totally unable, really, to provide for themselves. Those are ultimately the true widows Paul's going to talk about here. If any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents, for this is good and acceptable before God. What's Paul saying? If a woman has become a widow, and she has kids and even grandkids. All Paul's saying is that they should take up the responsibility and take care of her. Make sure that she is taken care of. That's what he's saying. He's saying the responsibility first lies with the family to take care of that individual. That's acceptable. That's good. I like the way he says, and I think, you know, you see this, you know, don't you feel a responsibility? I hope my kids do. Geez, I took care of them for 60, 80 years. If there's 1 or 2 years they got to take care of me, I hope they do it. Right? So that's kind of what he's saying. Paul's saying it, you know, parents and grandkids, you got to repay your parents. That's your obligation. That's your responsibility to take care and again, especially the widows. Now, she who is really a widow and left alone. See, that's a real widow, the one that's truly left alone. She has no support. She has no support system. She probably maybe doesn't have any children, certainly doesn't have any grandchildren. She may not, and again, in this time, there were no programs. There was no assistance, you know, governmentally and so on. There weren't even senior centers. I mean, you know, that she had to find her way. There was, and it was the duty, again, of the church to minister to her. If she's totally alone, she's trusting in God and continuing supplications and prayers night and day. That's the true widow. That's the widow you've got to make sure is taken care of. And I think there are good examples in the Bible. One of my favorite ones is Anna. And we read about her in the scriptures. At the time, we always do it at the time of Christmas. You know, here she has really experienced a hard life. She was married. Her husband tragically dies. And she's remained unmarried for many years, 60, 70 years. But what did she do? She's not bitter against God. She doesn't withdraw from God. She commits herself to God. And she serves. And she's serving in the temple, and she's serving the Lord, and she's continuing in prayer, and she's continuing in the scriptures, and she's continuing in, you know, this intimate relationship with the Lord. And the Lord speaks to her, and the Lord ministers to her and provides for her. And then that beautiful thing as she, you know, sees the Messiah and realizes, you know, the fulfillment. You know, the Old Testament scriptures, how she looked for that and desired that, and she was in the right place. She had put herself in the right place, you know, to experience that. You know, I think what a beautiful example of someone who suffered and experienced a tragedy like that and yet was so faithful. And so Paul's saying that you know, if she's truly a widow and left alone, then the church has a responsibility to support her and to take care of her. But she, look at verse 6, but she who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. And so he's saying is that, you know, if the woman is, again, not really interested in, you know, finding her fulfillment and being out, you know, in the world, living for, you know, looking, you know, to simply maybe be remarried and not really, you know, interested in the things of the Lord, you know, she's really even dead while she lives. And these things command that they may be blameless. If anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. And so I see how powerful this is, that you know, we should be responsible when there's real need, we try and minister, and we have a responsibility to minister to that real need. And certainly if I'm able-bodied and I have a responsibility to not only provide for myself, but to provide for my family as a man. You know, and I think that today, you know, some of the sisters, I've talked to a lot of them, and they're in a hard place because the system is set up that it punishes them if they want to kind of go and support themselves. You know, they've taken help maybe when they thought they needed it, and then they get out of that help. Wow. They're actually kind of punished. You know, to it's not set up that there's incentives for them to, you know, hey, I'm not going to take this help. I'm not going to take this assistance. And so, but for a man, you know, those are strong words. You know, if I don't provide, then I'm worse than an unbeliever, he says. Wow. And so the responsibility of every certainly able-bodied man is to be a provider. That's really what we were made for. Do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works. If she's brought up children, if she's lodged strangers, if she's washed the saints' feet, if she's relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. But refuse the younger widows when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ. They desire to marry, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. Yeah, it's just pretty straightforward. You know, Paul's saying that apparently this had to have been like an issue in the church, or he wouldn't have spent this much time on it. An older widow. Yeah, you get to be 60. I won't ask to raise for hands raised. We're 60 and above. Today, we can still do things, right? Not as easy as it used to be. Yeah. And so Paul says those widows younger than 60 should be able to provide for themselves. That's just bottom line what he's saying. If they're younger, and the other thing, if they're younger than 60, you know, they're probably... certainly they're able, even older than 60, you're able to get married again, but probably under 60, they might be really desiring that. And he's not saying there's nothing wrong with that, but he's just saying that again, they should be out, you know, providing for themselves if they're younger women. Paul, again, to understand some of the things he says, again, there's all kinds of debates, you know, as he was saved and so on. You know, that he was at one time maybe married. His wife left him, and, you know, because he was converted and so on and so forth. But he remained single, you know, after Christ and served Christ and was free to do what he... And so that's kind of like where Paul's coming from. That's kind of like his heart. He sees the benefits of just serving Jesus and being totally sold out, you know, to Jesus in every way. And so he's thinking, wow, you know, here's these single ladies, and they have an opportunity, again, not to be tied down at home, not to be, you know, tied down in a relationship, husband, wife, or they can just serve Jesus. They can just continue to go wherever they want to go, do whatever they want to do. And you and I maybe have I certainly experienced that. I experienced, you know, I was living here, and God said, move to California. I didn't even have to ask anybody. Do you want to move with me to California? Do you think? No, but I didn't have anybody. Why not? pack up the car and go. Yeah, it didn't really impact anybody. I could have went anywhere I wanted to. When it came time to leave California, and I didn't know if I was going to leave or not, but there came a time I felt God said, you know, it's time to go. I didn't have to ask anybody. We had Drew. Remember, how many of you remember Drew? A lot of you guys. He's a crazy guy. Him and Jeff actually got saved. We sent him to Calvary Chapel Bible School. Drew met his wife at Calvary Chapel Bible School. They got married. They moved back to Russell, Pennsylvania, Jamestown, Russell. In fact, they moved back. They were living right up here. We had a trailer up here. Guess when they moved back? From South. She'd never been east of the Mississippi. They moved back to Russell, PA in December. I can remember her just crying, just, oh, I can't take this cold. We had one of the worst winters ever. Snow and freezing cold and just blizzard after blizzard. And I can remember right in the parking lot, just breaking down. I can't take this anymore. It was hard. I felt so bad for her. She didn't know. I mean, she just didn't know what it was. It's not fun. You know, somebody told me just a few weeks ago, you know, wow, don't you love this? It's January 167 or whatever it was. You know, just the weather we've had. And I said, you're right. This is not the greatest. And so, wow. That was Paul's heart. You know, I'm just free to go. I don't have to consider, you know, what my wife would want or what my husband would want. Now, there's nothing wrong with having a husband or a wife, but if I want to today, if I, you know, want to move to Timbuktu, I hopefully Kim wants to too, because we're kind of tied together here. So that's all he's saying. Refuse, and again, they're able-bodied, and they need to be working, providing for themselves. They're young. They're able to do that. And look at what he says. The other thing he's saying is look at their lives. Here are these widows who may need support. What have they been doing? You know, where are their hearts? You know, what are their lives like? And he's saying they should be involved. They should be serving. They should be ministering. They should be in Christ, those you support. You know, those you can support. Look at verse 13. He says, and besides, there's a danger, too. They learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house. And not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Therefore, and here Paul says it's even good for them. All right, so he's not against it. I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house. You know, Proverbs 31, right? Just when you read that. What a beautiful example of a beautiful mom, a beautiful woman, a beautiful wife, overseeing, you know, her ministry, you know, in the home and beyond. You know, being energetic and being involved, being creative, being a businesswoman even. It's awesome. So, you know, don't be idle. You know, our kids today, what a challenge we have, right, as parents again. I think sitting on those computers, watching those computer games is idleness. And they need, I'm telling you right now, a man, a boy needs to learn how to exert himself physically. And if we as parents don't create that for them, it's not going to be good for that young man someday. You know, they need to mow the lawn. I mean, those are simple things. They can shovel the sidewalks. You know, they can pick up. They can. You need to teach them to work. You need to teach our kids to work, but especially the men. He's talking about widows here. I don't want to get off. Idleness. It's easy for individuals to become idle. And when we become idle, what Paul's saying is then we get involved in the wrong things. We tend to meddle where we shouldn't be. Again, when I'm not idle, I'm hopefully taking care of myself, which I think all of us would agree is probably more than a full-time job. You know, to just allow the Lord to continue to work in me and change me and minister to me. You know, why I'm always looking and thinking I got to tell other people. You know, the Word will do that and the Holy Spirit will do that. And so they become busybodies. Therefore, I desire that they marry, that they bear children, that they have their homes, that they raise their kids. Give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. For some have already turned aside after Satan. So if any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them. And do not let the church be burdened, that it may relieve those who are really widows. See, just defining those who are really widows. And I guess it doesn't make it simple. I mean, somebody that really just can't take care of themselves. They're older. Paul says that, 60 years older. There are exceptions to the rule, but someone who just can't, they have no means, they have no, you know, support system under them. And those are the ones that are truly widows. Just having, you know, freely handing out. Yeah, I mean, I just even think today they've tried it, you know, right? They tried it in Finland. You know, they try and they purport that they want to try it here. You know, everybody, you know, at a certain age, you know, we are going to send them a check every month. You know, I don't know what the amount was, but we're going to send them $500 a month. You know, they deserve it. They don't deserve it. They don't deserve it. They ain't done nothing for it. That'll work for it. You know, I think even our I'm telling you right now, some of you might not remember, but I don't know if Mona would even know because she worked. They used down at the state hospital there where they treated people that, you know, had different, you know, issues and emotional issues. They used to have a farm. It was a huge farm. And these patients would go and they'd work on the farm. I was a farmer. Grew up, and we would go down. They would do Penn State. Is a great farm college, state college. And so they would, you know, do different programs and so on. And Burdette Weiler was the man that oversaw that the farm down there. You can still kind of see the barns and stuff where the highway department, you know, for the conservation, they built that conservation thing there. You would go down there and these patients, they would be working and to me, wow, it gave them purpose. You know, you could talk to them, they had things, and then they start passing all these laws that it was abusive to make these people work. I just foolish. Just foolishness. So what are they going to do? Pump them full of, I don't know what they do. But I, you know, my sense is they probably just stuck them in a room, pumped them full of drugs. I mean, for a guy, man, if he ain't working and working off that energy and being physical, I mean, you're going to go crazy, right? When I'm looking at Adam, if I was sitting, I'd be doing the same thing he is. I'd be moving. I can't sit still. Why? Because he's a man. We got to be doing stuff. Yeah, women are the same. I mean, we got to have purpose. And And so I just think that you know, be responsible and certainly teach our kids responsibility. And those who have experienced a tragedy or man, let's walk with them through it. But if they're able, man, let's go on with life now. You know, let's support. And that's what he's saying as far as, you know, the problem with the widows. The church shouldn't be, when there's real need, I guess that's what I see here. When there's real need, we should be able to define real need. And when there's real need, meet the need. Be responsible as a church. But when there isn't, then we're not doing anybody a favor. And I think in our society, we're not doing a lot of people a lot of favors. It's too bad. So how we treat the older men, how we treat the older women, how we treat widows, and then elders. Let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor. Again, there's just that sense that there should be a respect, a reverence for those who are in positions of eldership, those who are experienced, those who, specifically in the church, those who rule well, especially those who labor in the word and doctrine. For the scripture says, you should not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain, and the laborer is worthy of his wages. And so all Paul's saying is that I think he's talking about, you know, those that would be in the church, pastors and teachers and so on. There's nothing wrong with them as they serve, as they're doing, you know, a worthy job, as they're doing it in a good way, as they're laboring in the word and the doctrine, working in the word and the doctrine. Hey, they should be able to be supported. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, an ox, when it's you know, tied to that wheel, and it's, you ever see how they, you know, they have the pole coming out and the wheel, and they chain them or tie them, and they just walk in a circle all day. Well, you're going to feed the ox, aren't you? Because it's grinding the grain and producing the flour or the food. Well, the same thing with those that are in the church and working in the church. Do not receive an accusation against an elder except from two or three witnesses. And just gossip and, you know, the whole thing. I think with guys, it's like, I don't know why guys, I think whenever I talk about somebody else, it's because I'm dealing with the same thing and that's an issue in my life. I think that happens a lot. Or I'm trying to elevate me, and to do it, I'm trying to push them down. And all Paul's saying is that there can be elders who need corrected. But it shouldn't just be a gossiping thing. It just shouldn't be, you know, that, you know, I'm always talking about, you know, somebody that's over me in a negative way. If he's really doing something wrong, then it should be pretty evident. And what? It's right, it's good when there's a couple witnesses, maybe three witnesses, and go and deal with it. And so don't receive an accusation against an elder. You know, oh man, oh Pastor Jim there. You know what he's doing? Oh yeah, I imagine he is. Oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. No. No, I'm not going to listen to that. I won't listen to it. And, you know, it's got to be evident by, two or three. I think Matthew 18 is always a good thing. You go look at Matthew 18. And that's just in relationships. If Jim has an issue with me, he'll come to me. And then if it's not solved, what do? He can grab another brother and come. Maybe two other brothers and come. And then at the very extreme end of that, if something that's really going to, affect the church, then you take it to the whole church. There's a time you do have to take it to the whole church. But I think those things are far and few, few and far between. There's times you that stuff happens. Most of the time, because we're all different people, and we're all dealing with our own issues, I think we need to realize that we are different people. We're all dealing with our own issues, and really, I think we do love one another. And so, I usually look at things as I probably just misinterpreted that. And I'll just choose not to take offense and not to make a big deal about it. And I'll just love them. Because love, covers a multitude of sins. And so I'll just love them. And if it really is an issue, then on down the road, I don't think it's going to hurt it. But on down the road, that'll come to light. And maybe I'll commit that to prayer too. Lord, if that's an issue, deal with it. And then I don't have to deal with it. Lord, you just deal with it and take care of it. Wow, are things peaceable? I'm just telling you. Calvary Chapel Russell, man, are things peaceable. Wow. And they've been peaceable a long time. We just pray. And you know what? It's just, we understand. Man, I could offend any one of you today. But you love me and whatever. He said that and I don't know. He's just wandering in his mind. He wasn't really, I just pray for him. And don't you think God's big enough to correct me? Don't you think the Holy Spirit's big enough to convict me? I think so. And hopefully I'll respond to that. And so, don't be accusatory all the time. And certainly, again, I don't think it's an issue here at all, but he's just saying it has to be an issue. Had to have been an issue back again, just talk. And this always negative stuff. Just I tend to move the other way. And again, like in ministry, I think if you see something that to you is a negative, then God's probably telling you to do it. It's not my job to do it. But I tend to look at the children's ministry. Look at what's happening with the young people. Look at the discipleship thing. Look at all the guys that are getting together for discipleship. Look at the radio ministry. This is awesome. God wants to do something else? Well, we'll do it. He has to show us and tell us to do it. And maybe he's telling you, if he is, do it. No, it's not a negative. It's a good thing. Those who are sinning rebuke in the presence of all, that the rest also may fear. There are times what did he say in verse 1? Don't rebuke an older man. Don't strike out. It's a different word. It's a different root word. Rebuke is a different Greek word here. Don't strike down. Don't strike an older man. Here, don't rebuke. Don't correct. Correct those who are sinning. There are times that... But watch my attitude when I'm doing it. If I love you, will I encourage you? If you love me, will you encourage me? If you saw me, you know, doing something I shouldn't be doing, or felt, do you love me enough that you come and tell me that? You know, and then as a pastor, if I was doing, I don't know what I'd be doing. Man, if I was trying to think of some examples. There might be a time he'd have to rebuke me publicly, or a person might need to be rebuked publicly. You know, certainly if it's infected in the church. You know, you got to preserve the church. I charge you before God and the Lord Jesus and the elect, the angels, that you observe these things without prejudice, doing nothing with partiality. I can sin. You can sin. I can make a mistake. You can make a mistake. Well, I'm a pastor. You're not a pastor right now. God, there's no partiality. You know, we're all in this. We're all men and women of like passion. And so Paul's just saying, you know, without prejudice, without showing any partiality. Somebody just told me that, I don't even know where it was, but they were saying, yeah, it's just like, this goofy stuff was going on, and the church stood against it, but there was an elder who was rich, and like really supporting the church, and he was doing the goofy stuff in his house, and they weren't going to say nothing about it. They didn't want, you know, they were just going to let him do what he wanted to do because he was a wealthy person supporting the church. Not partiality. God's not into partiality. Do not lay hands on anyone hastily. It's hard at times. Small church, somebody talented comes in, wants to be involved. Oh, yeah, get up here. Yeah. And you can get in trouble doing that. I mean, that's all Paul's saying. I like what he says earlier with the widows. You know, you ought to be able to get to know them. You ought to be able to get, man, even serving, they love Jesus. Man, they just have this heart. And another good thing is to get into their home and see, you know, what it's really like. Don't lay hands on anyone hastily, nor share in other people's sins. Certainly not that. You know, we don't want to, what, bad company. Paul says in Corinthians, bad company corrupts good character. You know, I don't want to be, you know, part of somebody's sins. Keep yourself pure. No longer drink only water, but, oh, Joe Foch just talked about this the other day. No longer drink only water, but use a little wine. Well, the Bible doesn't say, I can't take a drink. Why? Look at what he's saying. Timothy's sick. They didn't have pharmacies. They didn't have drugstores. They didn't have supermarkets where you go get NyQuil, you know? I was telling somebody the other day, if I take NyQuil with alcohol in it, bam, I'm out. It puts me right to sleep. Because some of that stuff has a lot of alcohol. I don't know how much, but it does, right? It has alcohol in it. So all he's saying is Timothy, you're sick. Maybe a sip of wine will help your stomach. Growing up on the farm, a lot of times when the little calves were first born and they are sick or whatever, we have a little thing, we give them a little whiskey. And that, like, just it'd warm them up and get them going. Just for their, you know, it helped them. It was a remedy, a kind of a medicinal thing. And so I won't go into the whole thing because we've talked about it before, but that's all Paul's saying here. He's not laying down a whole treatise here, an argument for the fact that you can drink wine. He's not doing it. He's just saying to one guy, Timothy, you're sick. Maybe as a medicinal thing, a little wine will help you. And that's all you can do there. You can't take it any farther than that. Some men's sins are clearly evident, preceding them to judgment. But those of some men follow later. Likewise, the good works of some men are clearly evident, and those that are otherwise cannot be hidden. And I guess just to wrap it up, pretty simple things. You know, love people, respect people, reverence people. And again, especially elders. Keep ourselves pure. Where there's real need, we should have a heart to minister to the need. We should want to meet needs. We should. I told somebody the church, in a sense, should be a hospital, right? I mean, the sick and the needy, really spiritually needy, man, they should be able to come here and get healed and find the help that they need. Love without prejudice. Don't show partiality. And I like the last part, the last verse. I want to be in that category. You know, be an individual that I just want to serve the Lord. I just want to, you know, I'm saved. God saved me. Ephesians, what? To do good works. You know, the fruit of being in intimacy with Jesus is you're going to be doing fruitful things. You're going to be doing good things. And don't become weary, Thessalonians. Don't, as you serve the Lord and fruit is being produced and there's good works, don't become weary in laboring in that. You know, hopefully, if you're full time in it and God's worked that, that's a great thing. But for many, there's a lot of, you're just serving Jesus expecting nothing in return. Sometimes among your peers, you don't get anything in return. Even to those that maybe you're ministering to. And that's why I think Paul says in Thessalonians, don't become weary. Just we're doing it for Jesus. And our reward's with Jesus. And our reward will be when we see him. And so, pretty practical. Not really exciting things, I guess, this morning. You know, just common sense idea. Jesus, just really common sense things. But they're good things. Because Paul says, you know what, think of these things. Be encouraged in these things. Don't be the whirlwind always. You know, just knocking people around. You know, be the one that's giving them a hug. Be the one that's encouraging them. Be the one that's helping them. Have that compassion, you know, for them.